Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360. On March 10th, 2017. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And I'm not, of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with SouthBayByJackie.com and producer of The South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
Gesundheit.
Cute.
I heard a little sneaky sneeze there.
Just a sneaky one.
Just a sneaky one. So how are you liking this weather?
Whoa, my goodness. It was so amazing yesterday.
I know. I couldn't help myself. I dusted off my bike and went for a ride.
Yeah, it was great, and we're looking forward to Saturday's going to be awesome in at the Farmers Market in Playa Vista. Looking forward to that. I'm ready.
All right.
So, you know, it's amazing, Jackie. One of my you know, great interests is the study of history, in particular European history during the war periods of, 1913 to 1945. And one city in particular, Jackie, is an amazing, fascinating study, the study of Cologne, Germany. Have you ever studied Cologne or do you know about it?
I've actually been to Cologne. I was in Cologne many, many years ago.
Okay, great. I've never been to Cologne. The architecture is quite unique in terms of its postmodern reconstruction after World War II, and of course the history of the location is ancient, like 2,000 years. I mean, it was the seat of a Roman Germania Inferior. It was quite the capital, as a matter of fact. It was quite a military hub and commerce hub and cultural hub for many, thousands of years. It's quite interesting place.
Yes, it is. Yeah, there's quite a history there.
So I would love to hear, Jackie, a choir from Cologne, Germany. I wonder if that's ever going to happen.
Well, not on today's show. Not on today's show, but eventually we'll get to it. Yeah. I was gonna ask,
well,
where were you going with this? But
I guess I do. I think you may have some guests that can help me with this, Jackie. Who are our guests today?
We have a room full of guests this morning from Miracosta High School to tell us about their upcoming concert. Now, MiraCosta Choirs will present their third annual cathedral concert featuring the 48-voice Advanced Women's Choral and the 29-voice Vocal Ensemble under the direction of Michael Hayden and pianist Mark McCormick. Now, this year, they are excited to present in concert with them the Comacor, I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, so somebody will correct me, the Comacor from the University of Cologne in Germany. With the special nature of having a European guest choir, MiraCosta is moving the concert venue from the high school to St. Cross Episcopal Church in Hermosa Beach. The concert is scheduled for March 21st at 7 p.m. And, Joe, this morning, our guests are Michael Hayden, choir teacher and director, Mark McCormick, choir accompanist, and co-teacher Chris Ornelas. Mark McCormick is the choir accompanist and co-teacher. Chris Ornelas is a student teacher. And students Emily Chase, Kayla Elson, Azan Esmail, Isabel Gray, and Kavita Sarathe. Welcome to the program, everyone. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome, everybody. Oh, boy, it's a big room. Okay, so we don't normally do it this way, but it'll work. It'll work. We're going to start with you, Michael. Tell us a little bit about how you've already visited Cologne. Tell us about that visit and how that inspired you to want to bring the choir to Germany and then from Germany to the U.S. Tell us all about that.
Well, this summer I went on this tour down the Rhine River from Amsterdam to Basel, and this is the tour that we're going to be taking during spring break with 60 of our singers and 100 of our family and friends. And so I started in Amsterdam, boarded the riverboat. The second day was in Cologne. And of course, the cathedral is one of the iconic cathedrals in Europe. It used to be the largest building in Europe in its time. And it's an inspiring cathedral. It's absolutely just stunning in its architecture, in its acoustic. And so actually I took this trip twice this summer in preparation for the spring tour that we're doing. And when I came back in the fall, on my Facebook page feed was a request from the conductor of the Cologne University Chamber Choir, the Kammerchor. And Jackie, you did a very good job of pronouncing that, by the way. he was requesting a concert appearance because he was bringing his choir here to Southern California on tour. So we actually aren't bringing them here. They're bringing themselves to tour Southern California. And when I saw his request, I immediately answered him back, told him who we were, said we were coming to the Rhine River tour, sent him a couple of links of who we are as a choral program and what we've accomplished, and he immediately said, we would love to share a concert with you. And so that's where all this began.
That's fantastic. Now, what is the name of this cathedral? And it's just called the Cologne Cathedral?
Correct. Yes, exactly. Of course, in German, it's probably a little bit longer than that, but typically that's
right.
How they refer to the cathedral.
And was this cathedral in the center of the city?
It's right on the river, so no, it's not. As we dock the boat right up to the shore, we are literally walking distance to the cathedral. You can see it as you're coming up, coming down. I think it's up the river at that point. You're coming up the river. It's just this very imposing structure. The spires just ascend so high. And so we will literally be a five-minute walking distance from the shore where we dock to the cathedral. So it's right on the Rhine River.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. This is amazing. As I said, and this is all, very, very fascinating about the architecture of Cologne because it suffered tremendous damage during the war, but the cathedral was not completely destroyed. There was an unwritten rule, and the RAF, the Royal Air Force, did their absolute best. Well, you know, it was wartime, but they did their absolute best not to destroy this iconic, historic, I mean, this world site. And wow, it's amazing. What a joy, what a privilege it will be for all these kids to see this an interesting location. Now, let me ask, Mark, let me ask, what is it like to accompany a choir? I mean, are you participating in the direction, or are you just another singer, so to speak, only you have an instrument and not your voice?
Well, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
Going back to what you previously said about the Cologne Cathedral for a moment, you know, the Monuments Men, the movie, that was
yeah.
one of the scenes where they were actually removing the stained glass from the cathedral to preserve it during the war. So it's interesting that you bring that up. And I've been doing some research to, you know, prep the students for going on this trip. And I thought that was just a really interesting connection. Have you seen that movie?
I have. I did not catch that reference, or I don't remember, but I do remember that there was significant, I would say, back and forth on that. Some people saying, if you destroy this, the world will never forget.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, there you go.
Well, in reference to your accompanying question, it's a pretty wonderful job. There's a difference between a pianist and an accompanist, and a pianist is primarily there, you know, playing as a soloist. But as an accompanist, your primary job is to really listen, and respond, and support. And so you're acting as not only a musician, as a soloist, but your primary job is to support everybody around you and act as almost a silent mediator between all of the musicians that you might be collaborating with.
Oh, I see. Have you been playing music, Mark, your whole life?
I've been a pianist for the last 30 years.
Wonderful,
so,
wonderful. That's
I would say so.
Oh, so he's not 60 years old.
No, I've been playing the piano since I was in high school, and had my beginnings in the instrumental world as a trumpet player, and then switched over to piano and did my studies in piano and then music education as a whole. So I've been fortunate to do a lot of different teaching, many different areas of teaching, from band, from choral, to general music, to orchestral conducting. So one of the things that I love about accompanying choirs is that it is very similar to, I think, being part of an orchestra. Because you're one voice among several different textures that can be created. And, you know, if I can bring it back to this concert, you're going to hear several different styles of music on this concert. And one of the things that we teach our students to do is to produce many different tone colors with their voices, depending on the piece that they sing. And so in that way, you know, I really do feel like I'm a member of a larger tonal orchestra when I'm accompanying a choir.
Right. Now, one thing I know, Michael and Mark, is that is it true, Michael, that the choir, or this particular chorale performance began in 2013?
Correct. And what we typically do is we have done this concert in the lobby of our auditorium. Our lobby is this four-story atrium space built in the 1950s, and it has the acoustic, I always say this to my friends across the country, it has the acoustic of a Renaissance chapel, and I often say a French Renaissance chapel, because I was in France singing in this lovely little chapel, and this, our lobby has this incredibly, what we call wet acoustic. It's very reverberant. So what we typically have done is 150 chairs, sold those chairs at $25 a piece, and then we do this concert in the lobby in candlelight to try to create a cathedral mood and aesthetic. And so that's how we've done the past two concerts. And then with the addition of the Comer Corps, we knew that we didn't want to limit this concert to only 150 people, and that's why we moved it to St. Cross Episcopal Church over in Hermosa, which is a lovely, lovely sanctuary in which to sing. It's beautiful.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, I want to move on to Chris. Chris Ornelas. Is it Ornelas?
Yes. Hi, it's Ornelas.
Ornelas. Hey, Chris. Were you there at the first Cathedral concert in 2013?
No, I wish. No, I just started with them in August.
Oh, I see. So tell us, what is a student teacher? Because you have some amazing credits.
Yeah, well, a student teacher, that's a great question. A student teacher is someone who's finishing their credential in teaching, and I'm finishing mine through Cal State Fullerton. And we do a full year long, and so I am with Michael and Mark and the kids all year long. And I'm also actually down with Heather Gold at the middle school. And so I split my schedule between the two schools. And it's really fun. It is exhilarating and overwhelming and amazing in so many ways. And I'm learning more than I could possibly absorb in a year. And basically, similar to Mark, we both contribute to the classroom in different ways. I'm doing more learning, I think, and so I'm just constantly taking notes and learning from Michael and learning from the kids, and trying to throw in my two cents when I can. But that's pretty much what I do. I just learn how to become a great teacher by great teachers, and so that's why I drive an hour and a half one way every day out to Manhattan Beach from Orange County, because it's just totally worth it.
You have played, speaking of great venues, I mean, you've played in some of the best venues we have here in Southern California, Disney Concert Hall, the Hollywood Bowl, the Greek Theater, but you've also played in Carnegie Hall. Tell us about that event.
Yeah, I've actually had some pretty lucky performance experiences, to say the least. The one in Carnegie Hall was through Cal State Fullerton. We traveled there with a small chamber group, and we performed some new music, actually music that was written just a few years ago. And so we premiered some pieces, and that was really amazing. That was an incredible trip, and that hall has such history. It's just, you could sing anything in there and feel like it's this incredible experience. The Hollywood Bowl was surreal. I mean, you've got thousands of people. It's a full house. I sang with Andre Bocelli at the Hollywood Bowl. And then I sing with Josh Groban at the Greek Theater, and that.
Okay.
Yeah, these aren't really small names, I know, and I feel so. It's almost funny to say it because it doesn't sound real. But these were just some of the most amazing experiences. And if I can bring anything to these students, I feel like I can at least bring some of the real life performance aspect while I'm still learning to be a great teacher. So yeah, this has been just really wonderful being here and being able to share those experiences with them. And what I've learned through all that, too.
Right, right. I'm sure Josh Groban says, hey, you know, yeah, I used to sing with Chris Ornelas.
He would be so lucky.
Right.
Yeah. I have to move on and get some more of these voices in, so to speak. Emily Chase, you're a senior now at North Costa. Who has sung as a soprano in choir since the sixth grade. Tell us about when you first got into choir. What was that week like? What was that year like?
Well, first of all, just to clarify, first in choir as a sixth grader or as a high schooler?
Oh, well, take your pick.
Okay, well, I kind of decided to join choir in sixth grade on a whim, and I knew friends were doing it, and so I've been studying music for pretty much my entire life, and so I was like, oh, okay, I'll give it a try, and I really enjoyed it, but I wasn't particularly good at it. But I had a basis in music theory, and like I've been playing piano for most of my life, so I had an understanding of musicality that I took to high school, and I was placed in an upperclassman ensemble my freshman year. And that completely like changed my perspective, and really my past 4 years have been just this progression of me trying to figure out where I can grow and where I can learn, and then trying to take the next step from there.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare piano and choir in terms of an experience of music? You know, playing an instrument, you're in control more. When you're in a choir, you're very much a cog in the wheel. You're trying to fit in and harmonize, right?
That's a fair point. I am an instrumentalist. I play piano, and I also play in the bands and orchestras here at Costa. And so I kind of understand instrumental music both from like a solo perspective and an ensemble perspective. And as a soloist, you're right, it's very individual and very personal, but the experience does link over very well because it's such an emotional experience when you're trying to like tap into what a piece is trying to say. As a soloist, you kind of get your own, you have your own take on it. In an ensemble, you have to agree with the choir or agree with the ensemble, and so it's different in that respect. But really, I tend to like I've never been in the position where I like completely oppose the interpretation that my ensemble takes on a piece of music. And so really it's just an experience of like, okay, so let's shape mm-hmm. this intention the way that we all agree on. Yeah.
How, Emily, how important do you think music in schools? I'm going to ask the students this question. How important do you think music, choir, band practice is for schools? I mean, you know, there's a tremendous amount of discussion among the parents about how these things are supported, how they're funded, and all of that. But from your perspective and your experience, would it have been a deficit not to have music in the schools for you?
I think a deficit would be an understatement, to be completely honest. It's been such an impactful part of my, like, not only life, but my, like, experience as a high school student, because it's such a grounding place to be when you're in an ensemble. You have a community that you're a part of. I know I have many friends who are here at MiraCosta, and they excel in academics, but they lack the sense of community that ensembles can bring. And that's just from like a social perspective, in addition, music, it has this way of linking very technical mindsets and whatnot, and a very emotional mindset. And so when you bring those together, like I've been able to, through this, like exercising this muscle of like linking those two sides of my brain, I've been able to see how other classes, other studies that I take influence maybe music, but maybe influence each other. And it's a huge, huge thing when you can take two completely different subjects and link them. And I
right.
can like completely attribute that to my music studies.
Right. Well, thank you. That was such an eloquent description of what I was looking for. I'm going to move on now to Kayla Elson. I want to find out more about your experience, sort of getting into choir. How did you get into choir, Kayla?
So I started in sixth grade at the middle school, along with Emily and Isabel here. We've been in choir together since sixth grade, and I was actually joined because my sister joined the year before me, and I had always loved music. My mom always, like, taught me to love music. She always sang to me, and we would sing together, and I just thought it would be a really great way to incorporate myself into the community of the school, and I knew that I would be able to find really great friends there because that's the experience that my sister has had. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the, as you know, Emily was saying, community, the popular term these days is finding your tribe. When you think about the tribe of choir, because now you're identified, I mean, everybody looks and says, oh, that's Kayla, she's in choir. it marks you, and tell us a little bit about that, being that in that tribe and how it relates to your performance, your sense of satisfaction in school and in life?
That's a tough question because there's so much I want to say.
Big one. Big one.
The choir program here has just, I think, provided everyone that's come into it with such a great sense of just family and home, like, if you're having a bad day, if you're having a bad week, you can always find someone there that you can talk to, that they will be there for you. I think it's through the music that we're able to build such close relationships, and it's such a beautiful thing that we can all come together and create this beautiful music and also build such a strong sense of community. And choir here, it's like, I think the arts here are a bit underrepresented because even though, like, people know who we are, I don't think they understand the great sense of community that we've built, and I think if they could all see that, that they would all want to be involved, because I know, as Emily said, people here are very strong in academics and the math and the sciences, but it's really the arts, I think, that bring that special aspect to COSA of family and of just a strong sense of unity among the school.
Great, great. Awesome. Very good way of putting it, I think. And as we move on now to you, Azan Esmail.
Hello.
Azan, hi, how are you?
Good, you?
Great. And really, I think we're interested in really giving people a sense of what the choir, individual people in the choir, their experience of choir. So tell us a little bit about your experience. You're in the 10th grade now, is that correct?
Yes, I am. I joined
so
choir.
I
joined choir in 6th grade, and I've been singing all my life. So for me, it wasn't even a question if I was going to join or not. But what I found, there was more than just a singing community, it was a community itself. And I joined because I wanted to sing, but I ended up finding a family of people there that I've been in ever since sixth grade. And there's, like Kayla said before, there is a community that you find in choir. And for us, choir is our first period of the day, and there's no other way I'd like to start the day because I'm exhausted in the morning. I think everybody at high school is. We're all overwhelmed sometimes. So starting out the day with something that we love so much and something that can get us rolling on our feet, I think, is incredible.
Wow, that's a great thing. I mean, everyone should open their day with the some meditation or prayer or some way of setting the path for the day. And now opening with choir in school is an awesome way to do that. So you've been in since the 10th grade. What kind of impact has it had on you? Sixth grade, I'm sorry. What kind of impact has it had on you, Azan?
Well, I think we do talk about this a lot in choir, that it's different from any other community in that if one person doesn't do their job correctly, the entire choir fails. They don't. It's a reflection of every individual person, but yet it isn't at all because it is supposed to be one group as a whole, not just people making up the choir. It's the choir itself. Everybody has to put in work themselves in order for the choir to succeed. And I think, I know I've said this before, but I think it's the whole community itself is the biggest part, part I love the most about the choir, because I know I can turn towards anybody here anytime I need them to.
Awesome. And more voices to hear from. Isabel Gray. Isabel, you're a senior now at Costa, so you're going to go on to have a potentially successful career in college. Are you going to continue, Isabel, in music?
Hi. Yes, actually I am. I'm going to be attending New York University next fall to major in vocal performance with an emphasis in musical theater. So I'm going to be working on music for the next 4 years and hopefully the rest of my life.
Wow. Okay. So you're making the big commitment.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
Okay. This is the thing. If you could talk to all of the state legislators and, you know, forget the Congress because they're confused, but the state legislators and all of the, you know, the school boards around the country, how important, Isabel, is music to the life of a student?
Or
arts in general. It could be visual arts as well.
Okay.
Or drama.
Yeah, I'm in drama too. I think that art is the only way that students have an outlet to really express themselves. In school, where you're sort of confined most of the time to fit standards or to meet expectations or to score high and be marked in numbers and kind of confined into this box of like being the perfect student and having a good transcript and, you know, looking good on paper. But art is something that allows you to get outside of that and access yourself truthfully. And I think that development is really, really important for people at our age because so many people feel lost or misguided or that they don't fit in. And accessing yourself and, like, finding yourself and your soul through art has really helped me personally to kind of grow into the person that I am today. I definitely would not be who I am without art and especially without music. It's the reason I get up in the morning. I have choir for sleep, so it's the reason I get up in the morning, but it's a motive going. And I mean, school can be really tedious, but when I know I can come to school and I come to school and I'm like, okay, I just have to make it through like three more periods, and then I have drama class, and then I have AP music theory, and then I have rehearsal after school, and it motivates me to continue to achieve. And I think that, I mean, we talk about it in choir, we've also talked about it in music theory and a bunch of other classes that relate to art, but art is something that can cross boundaries with learning. You can, like Emily was talking about earlier, you can connect all these different aspects of your life through art that you didn't think previously had connections. And I think that that's something that's very transcendent in a way, and in a world where so many people are looking for people who are well-rounded or like good workers or who can make those analytical connections, I think that music is something that, and art is something that really helps with that more than people assume it to help, because they're like, oh, it's art, you know, it's kind of a fluff thing, you do it for fun, but it's not. It's really just the most powerful learning tool I think that we have, especially as young people, when we're, you know, not encouraged to express ourselves as much as we should. And yeah.
Right. That's awesome. Awesome. Great. I love it. The most awesome learning tool. Moving to Kavita Sarathi. Kavita, when you think about your experience in chorus or choir or chorales or music, how do you to rate this among all the other activities that you have? Because many people in high school are doing sports, they're doing music, they're obviously their academics, they might be doing something at home with their family. How does this rate for you, Kavita?
Hi. Well, my entire life kind of centered around music. The other things I do mainly are drama and dance, and both of those have a very strong foundation in music. So I've been doing this my whole life. My mom was a musician growing up. My brother did it for a very long time. So it's always been a thing that was expected of me to do, but the way I manifested it in choir first really influenced me to continue with everything else. Choir taught me how to pick up the meaning behind a song and not just think of it as pretty notes. And I transfer that over. And I've been dancing for a very long time, and that helps me find ways to dance better. Choir has done everything for me. I would not have been able to do anything else in my life without it.
What style of dance are you most identified with? Jazz or what kind of style?
The two I would say are ballet, and I for about 10 years I did a classical Indian dance called Kathak.
Yes. How do you compare the two? I mean, dance is such an in your body, literally, physical experience, whereas chorale, it seems to me, is more of a out of body experience. You're listening and trying to adjust to the sound of everyone.
Okay, I see your point, but that's not how I take it. Choir, you have to be completely invested in everything you're doing with your body. You have to be standing the right way. You have to have the emotional connection in your heart and your mind behind it. It requires every muscle in your body to be paying attention and be conscious of what you're doing in order to have the outcome you want. So in that way, it's exactly like dance.
Very good. Very interesting. Very interesting. Michael, you've stacked the deck.
Go ahead.
No, please. This is my only comment is that you've chosen well. These are such great representatives of what the impact of choir can be for young people.
Actually, they all volunteered, and I can honestly say to you that I could take probably any – how many students do we have here? Five students. I think I could take actually any five students, and I'm going to go ahead and leap out and say this. Even at the freshman level, they could be as articulate as what you've heard today, because this is how we start our students here in our curriculum, is with – verbiage that gets them to understand relationships themselves, the music, working together, collaboration, cooperation, respect. I used in my classroom one learning theory and one book to help educate our students to the degree that you're experiencing today. And one of those things is the book The Four Agreements by Miguel Ruiz. It's a Mayan Toltec philosophy. And the Four Agreements, while they may seem very simple, are extremely difficult to master. And these students are presented those at the beginning of every year, and they really are, they buy into this. And students so often go out the door saying, "While you certainly taught us to sing and appreciate music, one of the most important things you taught us is the Four Agreements." And that helps form our classroom in a way that gets what you're hearing today. And you haven't even heard them sing.
I can. And we have not even heard them sing. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that. That's a very interesting concept. Let me ask you then, given the four agreements, I want to ask you each of the four agreements, how it relates to music and singing in a choir. It's a corporal event. It's all happening at the same time. Everyone has a part to play. How can you be impeccable with your word in choir?
I love this. You have just opened the door. We talk about this much. We really do. When I present this to the students, I say, you know, be impeccable with your word, which means in this case, when I look at you and say, you know, get this form in on time, are you going to do that? Or get this homework tomorrow, are you going to do that tomorrow? And they look at me and they say, yes. I said, then you are telling me that tomorrow at this point in time, you will hand this in. And they say, yes. And then it's their job to either follow through with that impeccability or not. And certainly being impeccable with your word also is about, as you'll notice in that description, it says not gossiping about others, not speaking against yourself.
Mm.
This is just critical to creating community, because it really helps students understand the relationships with each other, with themselves, with us as faculty. It's powerful, and they really relate to each other on a very honest and direct and truthful way.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So how
you go through the
does – this is an interviewer's dream to find a structure that people can go back to and get more depth from and then relate that to what we're talking about. But number two, don't take anything personally. How does that relate to choir?
My God, this is the one I have so much fun with, because in choir, what we do is we help each individual find their voice. And I mean that both literally and metaphorically. So as we address these students individually, and we look at them and we say, okay, Isabel, you need to not sing so heavy in that section because this is a lighter style of music. If we have done our work in teaching don't take anything personally, Isabel knows that this is about for the betterment of the choir. This is not insulting her. This is not saying she's a bad person. This is saying, Isabel, shift your vocal production to match the style that we're needing. And once they buy into that, the capability of growth is exponential. They truly get the fact that moving their ego out of the way enables the choir to move forward. So this one is it's just huge. And I always say to the students, if somebody had presented this to me when I was 14 years old, I know I would be a much mentally healthier person than I am today. But thank God at least I found it. I did.
Right, right. Okay, so number three, don't make assumptions.
That's a really fun one as well. And it's a really important one, because let's take it to the music. Here's a great example. When we say don't make assumptions, one of the first things we address in choir is, I hand out a piece of music. I handed the students Mozart, actually, for our tour that's upcoming and that's going to be on this concert. And the initial reaction of most of these students, they're all rolling their eyes and they're putting their thumbs down. They did not like this piece at all, because they made some assumptions at the very outset. And I keep reminding them, don't make assumptions, particularly in music, but we'll take that further later. And through the course of rehearsing this piece, this has turned into one of their favorite, if not their favorite piece of music in the concert. And so that ability to not make assumption keeps you open and keeps you open to possibility and open to creativity and open to even a richer experience in the music. And certainly not making assumptions about people. I mean, I could talk about that for the next hour, that we make, in particularly in today's political climate, we are making so many assumptions so quickly as a society, that we have to really rein that in and go, okay, wait a minute, let's pause. And let's really take a moment to just, you know, get information, not leap to conclusions, and really be healthy about this process.
Right. And then, of course, number four, always do your best.
Absolutely. And I hold them to that. Now, as the agreement says, your best will change from moment to moment, day to day, whether you're healthy or you're sick. But in that moment, you will do your best. You should choose to do your best. And I can honestly tell you, these students latch onto that in a way that is so obvious. They know that's the standard. Even when they come in, they'll say, Mr. Hayden, I'm sick today, but I'm going to sing. And I go, thank you for letting me know, because with that piece of information, I can then understand where they are, know that their best may not be as good as it normally is, but they're certainly going to be doing their best in that moment, because that's what we've established in the environment. And so that agreement helps us all to understand each other's health in the moment, our mental health in the moment, where we are just in our day, and it gives us room to really embrace each other in a way that, again, helps us all be more successful.
Right, right. This is, I see several of these students are looking forward to potentially studying psychology in the future. I think the first one I saw was, is it Emily? Are you going to be studying psychology in the future?
Yes, that's right.
How do you relate the four agreements and the use of the four agreements by the choir teacher to how the general public experiences, you know, psychology and the psychological, you know, therapy or whatever. This is kind of unusual, don't you think?
Well, yeah, and I mean, like Mr. Hayden said, these four agreements are so just like important, and they can absolutely change your life. And so, with the growing awareness and increase in understanding about mental health and just psychology in general, you know, having these four like guideposts as to like how to conduct a life that can like be optimal and be healthy. I think these four agreements are really important and understand. Like, always do your best. I think I like have to remind myself of that sometimes. But it takes me out of somewhere where, say, I don't feel motivated to do this homework assignment, and I'm just sitting there and I'm like, wow, I really don't want to do this. But then I think, okay, but like I can do better than that. And so it pushes me into a mindset where like I can achieve things even when I don't necessarily think I can. And then the other one's about making assumptions and being impeccable with your word. It just brings you to like a higher like sphere of feeling and understanding people, because I think if I'm being very closed-minded and just disregarding what I know about the four agreements, then I'm not in a good headspace to deal with people and to like access any degree of empathy. And so, with regards to psychology, I think it's just a very like healthy thing to be able to connect with people on that level and to understand the world from a very just like patient place.
A kindness. A patient place. Kavita, I want to ask you, it says in your bio that you want to be a doctor. What kind of a doctor are you looking to be?
It's actually I'm going to give you a very brief backstory on it. I got injured my freshman year from dance, and I went to a sports doctor, and they disregarded it as a sports injury because it's from dance. And I don't want that to ever happen to anyone else. So I want to create a program when I'm older of helping dancers, ice skaters, gymnasts, any artists who are disregarded by the sports medicine world, help them rehabilitate from their injuries.
Okay. All right. Good. When we talk about all of these experiences that these students are having, we're gonna just wrap it up. We've got about 11 minutes to go. Michael, I want to talk about the performance people are going to hear on the
right.
Is it the 21st?
Correct, March 21st.
March 21st
at St. Cross Episcopal Church in Hermosa at 7 p.m.
Right. Right. Beautiful church, up on a hill. It's really at 7 p.m. The sun might be going down just at that point. March 21st, we're going to spring forward. So we're going to get a lot more sunlight, like at 6 o'clock and 6:30. So it'll be close. What
That's
are
correct.
People going to experience?
You're talking, you actually bring up a really interesting point that in our lobby, when we do this, because of the spring forward, it is right at sunset. So the audience is experiencing this music at what we would typically think to be at Vespers time or maybe just a little bit after Vespers, which is an evening service typically in the church. And so they're experiencing the dimming of the light of the day. And I like to think in that, in terms of this concert, that as the dimming of the light of the day is going down, the music is rising up and sort of feeding their souls at the end of the day. One of the things I want to make sure that the audience hears about all this is that here we are in a public school, public high school, comprehensive high school, and we're doing all this sacred music because most of the choral tradition comes from that body of work in over the centuries. And one of the things I always make sure my students understand is that I never ask them to believe or put onto their own belief system any religious or particular church ideal. But what I do want them to do is sing the inherent drama in the music. So with that said, we programmed this. I think this cathedral concert is going to be spectacular. We start in the 11th century with music of Hildegard von Bingen, who is a mystic, abbess, writer, scholar, composer. She's considered the first female composer of Western music. And the Advanced Women's Chorale of 48 young women will be opening the concert with this Gregorian chant. It's just stunning. It's very mood-setting. And so we move through the ages with this music. We sing motets. We're singing a couple of motets by Antonio Lotti. It's his 350th birth anniversary this year, and some just gorgeous music. He's Italian, Renaissance. We move into the Baroque with English composer, Thomas Tallis. Thank you. Thomas Tallis, his motet, If You Love Me, a standard in the choral repertoire. I put together a Missa Brevis for this concert, Missa Brevis meaning a short mass. I've chosen movements from different composers of different time periods, and so the students are experiencing a short version of that mass, which many of these composers composed. And then we do 20th century sacred repertoire between the two choirs. Cologne, Kammerchor, is bringing this beautiful work by Brahms that I actually am not familiar with. It's going to be new to me and our students, which I'm very excited about. But then they're bringing to the performance Bach's Jesu meine Freude, which is just a wonderful piece at this time of year during Lent. Then we're joining in a tradition of American spirituals. I have done a real journey on spirituals. There was a time when I was doing them a lot in my career in the early years, 38 years ago, and I realized as a white male, I did not know what I was doing with this music. And so I stopped doing it. And I started doing research, and research at that time hadn't really come out about African-American choral music. But through the development of graduate studies and the DMA programs and master's programs in choral music and choral conducting, research began to surface American spirituals. And so through the course of these years, I've now sort of come back to the spirituals with new eyes. And so we're doing these American in conjunction with the Kammerchor. We'll be singing, 100 voices will be joining together at the end of the concert. It's going to be spectacular. The real traditional concert.
This is a can't-miss event.
It is.
How many seats? You said there might be 400 potential total seats?
400 potential seats. We have already sold over 200 tickets. So we're halfway there. I know tickets are going out to the St. Cross community this Sunday. Folks can get tickets from me. I can give them a link if they'll email me at mhayden, so it's M-H-A-Y-D-E-N, at M-B-U-S-D. That's for Manhattan Beach Unified School District, .org. So that's mhayden at mbusd.org. And I can either send them the link to purchase tickets on our website or somehow get them to the place where they can get tickets. $25. It's a pricey ticket, but it's also two things. It, first of all, supports our choral department, but more importantly, I think people are paying a lot more for a lot less. I think this, this evening is going to be incredibly inspiring. It's just going to be plain beautiful. And I think people will walk away with a real sense of what choral music does for a high school student and certainly a university student, as they're going to see with the Commerce Corps from Cologne. I got to tell you, I just gave myself goosebumps because this is the first time we've hosted a European choir, and I am just thrilled at this opportunity. I really am, for all of the people that will experience it.
Tremendous amount of history and also beauty. I love the aspect of the American, as they were called, the American Negro spirituals being celebrated and studied. This is going to be a special night. Also, I have to say, when I was in high school, Don Miguel Ruiz had not written the Four Agreements. For me, it was the PhD anthropologist Carlos Castaneda who revealed to me the Toltec wisdom, the ancient wisdom of Mexico. I don't think many Mexican Americans or even Mexicans understand how, you know, where Toltec wisdom stands in the pantheon of philosophies, ancient philosophies. But Carlos Castaneda, look it up, ladies and germs. A Separate Reality, Journey to Ixlan, Tales of Power, The Teachings of Don Juan, A Yaqui Way of Knowledge. Look it up. It's quite impressive.
That sounds great.
Had you ever run across Carlos Castaneda's writings, PhD from UCLA?
I've heard of the name, but not the writings.
Yeah, I grew up in Chicago, and we studied those quite heavily. And then, of course, those were the 40 years prior to Don Miguel Ruiz writing the Four Agreements. What an amazing interview this has been. Michael, we love what you're doing at MiraCosta. What an opportunity for the students to start their lives and their potentially their music careers, in the case of some of them. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michael Hayden.
I am so honored. We all are. We as these students have said, I think many times the arts are undervalued, and we have to be a very strong voice, a clarion voice, actually, I think, in our culture today and our political climate. We need to keep saying how important these arts educations are to these kids, because it truly makes them better people.
Right. Mark McCormick, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for accompanying us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've got the best job in the world, I guess. Come play the piano and hear these miraculous voices every day.
Chris Ornelas, thank you so much.
Yeah, and thank you for having us. This was such an inspiring thing for me to see all of these students talking about how art has just impacted them in such an amazing way, and it launches me right into my career in a very exciting way, and I just think this is amazing, and so thank you so much.
Thank you. And Emily Chase, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much. I really am honored to be here, as Mr. Hayden said.
Have a wonderful career. I hope you do pursue psychology in the future. This is amazing. Kayla Elson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us. This is like a really cool experience. I've never done anything like this, so it was really cool.
I've never done anything like this. This is great. And Azan Ismail, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. This is really incredible.
This is a document that lives forever. It's on Facebook. It's gonna live forever. Isabel Gray, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to speak.
Thank you, and thank you for inspiring others to make music and drama and dance and musical theater a career for and of course, thank you, Kavita Sarathi.
Thank you. It was so great being on this today.
May you heal many people in the future. And, of course, thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe. What a fantastic show.
Wow. Wasn't that great? I mean, this is how we inspire the next generation to be inspiring. This is amazing.
Hey, they're inspiring me. Never mind the next generation.
All right, that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll hopefully see you on March 21st at the St. Cross Episcopal Church in Hermosa Beach. We have some amazing things happening in the South Bay, and this is just one of them. Don't miss, can't miss event. Bye-bye.